welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host, our special guest author in person, not on the radio, Teresa Tomeo. Her book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, Discovering Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places, and Destinations Off the Beaten Path, all in one book, proudly published by EWTN Publishing. Always great to see
great
you
to
in
see
person.
You in person.
We get
talk
to talk
you every week, but here
each
we are.
Week on the radio, yeah. Going over EWTN's wonderful programming. It's great that you allow us to do that. And of course, people would have seen you on with Father Mitch,
yes.
talking
yes.
About this book just recently. Mm-hmm. And I know you also taped some segments with Jeanette.
With Jeanette, so
talking
it's been
about
great.
It as yeah. well. Now, you're one of Italy's wonders, at least for EWTN Radio, that's for sure. So, and I know you love to travel, and you've always had, you talk a lot about your trips and mm-hmm. things, even on radio and stuff. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, as you know, and EWTN has been so gracious to allow me to basically take the show on the road, you know, mm-hmm. and do the show from overseas so often. And my husband and I just fell in love with Italy because of our Italian heritage and leading pilgrimages there. And I was gaining so much knowledge and information that back in 2019, I was encouraged by several people, including Dr. Ralph Martin. Mm-hmm. I helped him plan a trip when he was getting his PhD
okay.
over in Rome, mm-hmm. that, you know, you really should put this information down. Mm-hmm. You've got a lot of information. You've learned so much. You know, my friend John Hale from Corporate Travel told me, you know more than most travel agents know mm-hmm. about Italy. And so I just decided to put it in a book, but I didn't want it to be just a guidebook mm-hmm. because Italy is, as I say in the book, it's meant to be savored. And it is meant to experience, and it can be so life-changing mm-hmm. in so many ways. And so I wanted to put right. it in a book, and I can remember writing it and sitting there and thinking, I left this out, I left that, because you know, you've been mm-hmm. there, and you just go to Lazio, for example, the region mm-hmm. of Rome, and you could write 20 books and just cover, right. you know, scratch the surface. So it came from the heart, and I just wanted to share not just places to go, but the experience of Italy and the right. Italian people, and the faith, most importantly.
Now, the foreword is from your good friend up in Detroit,
yeah.
Father John Ricardo, who yeah. everybody thinks is a great speaker and always. But he talks about you putting this book together with your own inimitable style. What kind of style do you think that is?
I think I'm a lot like you in the sense that you and I speak very plainly. We're mm-hmm. from the East Coast. We right. just give people information, say, look, this is the way it is.
Sometimes whether they like it or not.
Right, but we speak from the heart, you know. We speak from the heart, and I think that's what I've done. And really just walking people through, do this, mm-hmm. you know, this might not work out, but just being very honest with them and what to expect. And talking about, speaking of New York and the East Coast, talking about Madison Avenue and how Madison Avenue, in many ways, is only selling one part of Italy, and they're not selling the true beauty of it.
That's a good point.
So, you know, I think the style is me. It's I write the way I speak. I write the way I'm on the radio.
Right.
So it's, you know, very, sometimes in your face, but it's there.
Right.
Good
no,
information.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's interesting, he talks about the time he spent 4 years in the 1990s, et cetera. He's been to Italy many times. He said, that said, I found myself constantly repeating, how did I miss that? Why did I never go there?
Right. Yeah. And that's what Dominic and I discovered going back every year, that you turn a corner in Rome, you turn a corner in Florence, and there's something else. There's another church. There's another piazza. There's another fountain that you haven't seen before. And you realize that the way the city and the country has been built over so many centuries, there's just a never-ending wealth of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what I try to tell people. Yes, you need to see, obviously, the Vatican. You need to see the Pietà. Mm-hmm. You need to see the David. You need to see the Colosseum. But you also need to see the life in Italy.
And kind of get out of Rome.
And kind of get out of Rome, yeah.
Because right.
Rome can consume you, although I love Rome.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, but also I think my real prayer with this book, Doug, is it's stealth evangelization for mm-hmm. me. I want people to see the beauty and not only think about the art, but the artist and who made the artist. I mean, really, if you go to and stand in front of the David, or you stand in front of the cathedral in Orvieto, mm-hmm. the first question is, how did they do that?
Right.
How did any human being do this?
And how do they not have the ability to do it now?
That's, exactly.
That's the amazing
right.
part.
Right. And so hopefully they're thinking.
So, because we're so much more talented,
exactly,
smarter than
right?
they
we
were.
Exactly, right. We know everything. Right, they knew right, nothing
right,
back then.
Right.
So, but how did they do it? And who gave them the gifts to do it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my goal with this book is evangelization.
It's interesting. He also said, and ancient Roman buildings continue to impress the minds of modern engineers. And he said, 1975, he talked about the Detroit Lions moving to the Pontiac Silver Dome. And he said, not only does that team no longer play there, but the stadium doesn't even exist. Okay,
mm-hmm.
compare that with the Roman Colosseum built in the 70s, not the 1970s, but you know, and it's amazing how these things are still there, like you're saying.
Yeah, and that to me, I think it's a history lesson, it's a faith lesson, it's a lesson in beauty, but it forces you to hopefully, and some people don't, but when you go to a place like Italy, it forces you to slow down.
Right.
And to think, you know, and that's what I really want people to do as well, is hopefully eventually think about God, but just to really process something that has happened and it has been here for so long. What does that mean?
Right. Well, do you think as Americans, we're so task-oriented, and especially now in the world we live in, where he makes the point that food, for example, isn't just fuel for the body for Italians, it's relational. He says, why rush home to bury our heads in a device when we've been created for friendship and communion? Mm-hmm. And so many young people especially are losing that.
Yeah. And what's interesting that I've been noticing when we go back, some of the big cities are now, like, for example, Rome and Milan. You do see a lot of the American trends with the phones, everything right there as well. I'm not saying that people are immune to it. But I'll tell you what, when they sit down for their pranzo or their cena, their lunch or their dinner, their families don't want them on the phones. Those kids are engaged. And the families are out, which amazed us, having grandnieces and nephews. Those kids are out late. The parents don't go to dinner, as you know, until the families don't go to dinner until 8 or 9 o'clock, and the kids are with them. And they're around the table, and they're having a great time with Nona and Papa and enjoying the meal. And it's still, that meal time is still very, very important. And you still see that all over Italy.
I remember one time asking Father Lombardi, you know, we're going to go to dinner tonight. He said, well, what time would you like to go? And I think I said, like, I don't know, you want to go at 5:30? He looked at me like,
what planet are you on?
He said, how about 7 or 7:30? Yeah. I said, oh, okay, I'm sorry about that.
And that's even early, right?
Right,
7 or 7:30.
Right, exactly. Well, he understood I was trying to get down early. Yeah, you mentioned John Hale, who's president of Corporate Travel, and he has a preface in here, talks about a pilgrim's perspective, and he says, if pilgrimage is a metaphor for life, how do you see it as a metaphor for life?
Because as believers, we're all on a journey through this life. And whether we ever go anywhere, we're journeying, hopefully, to be with Jesus, right, in heaven. And so it is a metaphor for life because when you're journeying, you're supposed to be learning things along the way and hopefully growing. And Italy is a perfect place for that transformation to happen over time. So when you go through, I was just telling your producer, Jason, before the show, that we had three people in our last pilgrimage come up to us privately, me and Deacon Dom, and say they were coming back to the church.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it was just, we didn't expect anything. They just came up, and it's interesting because they came for the art, the food, the wine, great. And their family member or their friend was going, and they said, well, I'd love to see Italy. Italy's Italy, right? They were fallen away Catholics, and they weren't anti-Catholic in any way, but they went to all the masses transformed by the overall experience. And so that's, I think, why it's a metaphor for life, because it's a journey, and if you're truly journeying through life, you should be open to different experiences.
Right. And he also talked about the idea of the beaten path, and we're on a pilgrimage. Many well-known holy sites can be crowded and noisy, creating a physical barrier, going deeper and experience God in a more meaningful way. It's finding those side locations that you become, and he refers to you, and effectively being an expert on and knowledge of. So, but how many trips does somebody have to make to see all these things?
Well, I don't think you have to do as many as I've done, but I just love it so much. It's become a passion of ours. But I do think you need to, even if you're going for the first time, and I do Italy consultations, as you know, is I tell people, okay, you need to see, do one day, do the Vatican museums, but take the next day off and then wander. And I also give them, because I've been there so often, I give them different churches to go. Like one of my favorite churches is Santa Cecilia in Trastevere, which is kind of off the beaten path in Trastevere, on the other side, far away from Santa Maria in Trastevere. And a lot of people don't go back there, but it's a whole different section of this great neighborhood. You know, or go to the Purgatory Church. You know, Susan Tassoni, our friend, was the one who told me about the Purgatory Church.
The Purgatory Lady,
which you
right?
walk by, because it's right along the Tiber, not far from Castel Gandolfo. And you go in there, and there is a little museum in there where there's actually, it's proved by the church, relics, they believe, of people who are reaching out from purgatory and have touched items, and there are burn marks on those items. And so there's a very small museum with those with those relics in there. So those are the kind of places, and what that does is after you see all the immense beauty, you can relax and think about it. Because I was just talking to someone, who was I talking to the other day, who said that they were so glad that they only did one tour a day because they could not get over everything that they were seeing. Right. It was so intense. Like after seeing the Sistine Chapel, or even walking, the first time you walk into St. Peter's, right?
Right,
it's
right.
It's crazy. So
even just into, yeah.
Right, and to the right is a Pietà, and you go down the main, it's just mind-blowing. Right. And they were able to just sit and relax.
Right, and that's what our Lord wants us to do.
Yep.
What's so good about the beaches at Positano?
Well, I think it's not as good as it used to be. It's beautiful, but
there was
one of
apparently
the
a very attractive American couple there at some point.
Yes,
right?
Yes, as in me and Deacon Dom. I don't know about how attractive, but we were attracted to the area. It is beautiful. Positano is beautiful. It's part of the Amalfi Coast, but I tell people, if you want to go to these places, go see them, but don't end up staying there, because unfortunately, as I mentioned, Madison Avenue and the social media, I think now, the influencers have taken a lot away. Mm. And so there was a story that just happened a couple weeks ago where a woman who lived in Naples went over to Abruzzo to a ski resort, and she's a big influencer, always posting herself on social media here, there, and everywhere in Italy. And she talked about being at the ski resort and how great it was. And they had 10,000 people from Naples go across Italy to this one town in Abruzzo in one day.
Wow.
And so it's really starting to affect, these social media influencers are really starting to affect, unfortunately, the infrastructure like we're seeing in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to be very careful.
I see.
When they go to places like Positano, as beautiful as it is. But that story that I share in the book was over 20 years ago.
Okay.
And so the Amalfi Coast has changed. Go see it, but then stay somewhere else.
Well, you talk a lot about the food and how you couldn't believe the food was so much better over there. But you do warn people to not go over there and order a plate of spaghetti and meatballs.
Well, please. Please don't cut the spaghetti, for the love of God. You know that. You have to, twirl it. It's not rocket science. So people expect spaghetti and meatballs is really an American thing.
Right,
And being from the East Coast, the Italians came over, and when they started to make a little money, they started to add meat to the dishes.
It's like chop suey. I don't know what you're talking about in China. Right?
You go to Italy, and meatballs are either an appetizer, the polpetti, they're smaller, or they're a main course.
Mm-hmm.
You could order them on the menu. So then you're not, unless you're going to a tourist trap, you're not going to find spaghetti and meatballs on the menu.
Right. Yeah. And you talk about the idea of not rushing for your seat, but that the most important reason is the faith factor, and that in these, it's a journey of truly embracing the depth and beauty of the Catholic Church, and you actually quote 1 Corinthians 2:9.
Yeah, about eye has not seen, ear has not heard. Because to me, I know that verse, many scripture scholars always say it points to heaven, and I believe that, and who's to question them? They're a lot smarter than me. But I also believe that God gives us so much on this earth that we miss because we don't take the time to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you look at Italy, I think Italy is giving us a foretaste of heaven, because it's just so incredibly beautiful.
You're talking about seeing it as God's handiwork.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And every day, and as you know, we live there part-time now.
Mm-hmm.
I look out over the Umbrian Hills, and I just thank God for the beauty, and thank God for my eyesight. It's constantly making me aware of the creativity of God.
Yeah. In fact, you also talk about the fact that Italy is God showing off.
Yeah, he is. He's showing off. It's like, looky what I can do.
Right. So you were actually an 80s yuppie, huh?
I was.
Uh-huh.
I was, yeah. And
you went chow to the church?
Yeah, I said arrivederci. Right. I mean, it wasn't a anger thing. I just drifted away.
Yeah, you just drift.
I drifted away.
Because there was no reason not to drift away.
We were, successful. We were having a grand old time making our money and doing our,
And nobody
careers.
Was saying to you, what are you doing?
No, nobody.
Because everybody else was basically doing the same thing. Right.
And, then we had our many come to Jesus moments and came back. And first time after we were back in the church, about 2 years later, we took our first trip to Italy. And it was a pilgrimage through our parish, and that was, we were hooked.
You say the beauty of our marriage being healed and our lives being changed led us to discover goodness and the mercy of God. You say, although this book is not about our faith testimony, it is in many ways a testament to God.
Because all glory to Him, and I am utterly humbled by the people who built Italy, people who went before us, who built the churches, and the love that they had so much for the faith, that they were so dedicated to make sure these churches, and what people don't understand, and I really pray when I see people in line at the Vatican, and we know that many people go to Rome, they're not necessarily Catholic or faithful, but I pray that every person in line sees God in the art in some way, shape, or form. Where you stand in front of the amazing cathedral in Orvieto, and the whole thing is a catechesis. On the one side is the Old Testament, the other side is the New Testament, the life of Christ, the life of Mary, and the mosaics, and so they're reading the Bible. So back then they didn't have a Bible, so they would go into church, and they knew when they were going in what the story of salvation was from the outside.
Right.
And then you see that kind of a pattern at many of the major cathedrals around Italy, and then you realize everything is pointing to God. And I know that there are areas of Italy where they're not so faithful. Some areas are more faithful than others. But you cannot help everywhere you turn. God's there. Mm-hmm. The Catholic faith is there.
Right. It's really the ultimate holy reminders, that ability of having that, which is why things like what we do here at EWTN, what Mother wanted to do, a religious catalog, because it's not a Catholic country per se, where it's just not natural to walk and see these beautiful churches.
Right. Well, I was taping at the Shrine the other day in Hansville, and I was finishing
that's
up and we're doing...
That's an exception to the rule.
but that's incredible. What I was going to say is that I was there and looking at that and thinking about her wisdom in building a shrine that looks so much like Assisi.
Absolutely.
To take people there.
Right.
You know, phenomenal.
Right.
Phenomenal.
No, you go up there and you're in another world. Mm-hmm. So, now you talk about in Savoring Italy and how to use this book, and you view this as the ultimate guidebook for any type of trip to Italy. Mm-hmm. So that could be what, pilgrimages or private
personal
tours,
pilgrimage, even a vacation. You know, my goal is, as I said,
you could even use it at home if you don't even get to go. Right?
I wrote it for anyone who's interested just in learning about Italy. Mm-hmm. You don't have to leave. And I think the way we shot the online series, I mean, their wonderful crew in Rome, Anthony and company. Oh my goodness, the B-roll is just phenomenal. And so you can go there without ever leaving the comfort of your home. I really would encourage people, if they can do it, to do two pilgrimages in their lifetime as a Catholic, the Holy Land and Rome. Right. I mean, Italy. I mean, just two things.
You say, as well, an enjoyable and informative read to help you better understand Italy's spiritual roots. Mm-hmm. What is it we don't understand about that?
I don't think we understand the depth of the faith. I think someone who's been back in the church now for well over 30 years, I still feel like sometimes when I read something, that just blows me away, that we're just scratching the surface.
Right.
And I think the art and the churches and the lifestyle in Italy lends itself, it's very Eucharistic, and it lends itself for us to learn more about the faith. I don't think we can ever learn enough about Catholicism.
Right. No, well, that's clear. Just keep going.
Yeah.
What did Aquinas say? Everything I've written is straw. I mean, what's he?
Yeah. So, that's a great point, because I remember listening. Father John Mercato always brings up that line. Mm-hmm. And walking around Italy, you think, you can't comprehend the glory of God in these places, because it's like, you can't, how do you look at this and not see God? Even if you don't believe in our God, somebody up there, you know, maybe hopefully they do, because it's the one true faith, but it's just so, it's overwhelming.
You say you'll include a comprehensive collection of Italy's most important sites of religious significance. How did you determine which ones were the most important and which ones to leave out, or did you leave any of them out?
You know, I had to leave some out, because at one point, it got to be 400 pages, and I said, I want people to be able to bring this with them, or carry it with them somewhere if they're going to go to Italy.
Put it in your purse or
your overnight bag
or
whatever.
Right.
Okay. And so I had to leave some out, but I didn't leave the main attractions out. So if you go to Rome, you know, the four major basilicas, the Vatican museums, ancient Rome, the catacombs, if you can get a Scavi tour, great.
Right, that's beautiful. Wonderful tour.
Okay, so if you do that, you've seen quite a bit, right? The major basilicas, the Vatican museums, Sistine Chapel. And then maybe go to, only an hour and a half away, go to Assisi for the day. Another, several major sites in Assisi, the tomb of St. Francis, tomb of St. Clair, now the tomb of Carlo Acutis, St. Carlo Acutis soon to be. So try to give them the major sites, Florence, the David, the Ponte Vecchio, Santa Croce, the Duomo, the baptismal doors, but you can't see everything. So I did try to give them the major sites that they, I've seen the big stuff, and then maybe they can take time to go off the beaten path.
Right, and you get a chance at the same time to see the history of Rome, the Colosseum.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Ancient Rome, Colosseum, the Forum, if they have time,
The Pantheon.
Pantheon's amazing, which is now a beautiful church.
Right, exactly. Now, you have here listing beloved saints of Italy, including lesser-known saints, region highlights for each of the things. One, as you say, T's, must-sees, and must-dos point you to the best of the best from each region. Yeah. Was that your idea to put that together?
Because that's what I do for my clients at T's Italy. Like, they want to, how do you experience Rome? So one of the things I tell people is try to go to a rooftop bar and have your little Aperol Spritz or your little vino, even if you don't drink, have your sparkling water, whatever.
Right.
But get it from a different vantage point. You know, go up to the Hotel Forum overlooking the what we call the wedding cake, the Vittorio Emanuele Monument, or overlooking the Forum, and have this view, or go up to above Piazza Navona to the Palazzo Bernini up there and have dinner and look out over the, you know, the famous Piazza Navona. Mm-hmm. Do some of those things. You know, and those are my T's, must-dos. And take a walk. Just walk in Rome. Rome is meant for walking. Just walk everywhere. I even have like a mapped out path that you can see all the major piazzas and just stroll without a guide. Do it on your own. And as you're walking, oh, look at that restaurant. Oh, look at that little shop. Oh, look at that little church over here. So you're doing the passeggiata, you know, the stroll, and just being a part of the city, part of the life.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I was wondering, besides the must-sees and must-do points, were there must-not-sees and things you shouldn't do?
Yeah, I mean, I do talk about that in the book. I try to be very positive, but I do warn people about the crowds and the touristy areas and what's been taken over. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, and it breaks my heart, but places like Venice, which are still immensely beautiful, if you really want to experience it, you have to go in the off-season. Same for the Amalfi Coast, unfortunately. We took friends to Capri, the Isle of Capri, last year, and I warned them and I said, I'm just telling you, it's going to be very crowded. And it took us almost an hour to get a cab from Ana Capri, which is the upper part of the island, to the lower part of the island. And that's, we've been there many times. It hasn't happened before. So I try to be honest with people without being negative and say, look, you can have a similar experience with a similar view along the same coastline without being with 10,000 other people who are trying to get to Capri or go to, you know, Amalfi and get their limoncello. You can do other things in that area and still see the same and feel the same. Yeah, but they want that picture. They want to be Diane Lane and under the Tuscan sun, which is ridiculous. Yeah, please, in the white dress and the, you know, whatever. But or they want to take that picture in Positano with their, you know, fiance, and oh, we got engaged here and it's so romantic. Well, all of Italy is romantic for crying out loud. You know, go somewhere else. So I just try, I try to be honest, but you know, in my Jersey City, New York style, not trying to be too blunt, but you're going to waste your money if you're going to go to all these tourist places in high season.
Right. You know? Right, and then the heat, the time of the year.
Oh, mamma mia, as you know.
The reason they take the month of August off isn't because they're lazy.
You'd be surprised, though, how many people refuse to adapt. And they say, I can't go any other time. I have to go during the summer. And then they get mad at me because I'm telling them, okay, well, you're paying me to do a consultation. If you go in the summer and you're going to Rome, if you're first of all, you're going to be standing in line for hours, and it's going to be immensely hot.
Right.
You're spending all that money. Why not go at a time of year when it's much more comfortable? Even if you have to take the kids out of school for a week, you're going to waste your money.
What would be the best time of the year you would
for me,
recommend
I, we
for
always
people?
Take, we always take our groups in the late fall.
Okay.
So, for example, this year we have a sold-out trip in late October, 50 people, and very, like, the last 2 weeks of October. So I would say any time, even now September is really crowded. Used to be September was better. So I say mid-October to mid-November. The weather is very, very nice, even in November. And we were there shooting with our crew for the series, for the online series. We were there in November, and we were in Orvieto. And Orvieto is very popular with Catholics and also people who are interested in archaeology because of how it was, the town was built and Etruscan history and whatnot. Doug, there was nobody there. There was one tour group in the entire city. We had a permit. We had a permission to go and tape inside the church, but we were the only ones in the Duomo in Orvieto with the Eucharistic miracle. We were the only ones, imagine that. So late fall, great time. And also before Easter, early spring.
So you have the various regions, they're all cut up here in the book, and you run through those. One of the things I also noted was at the end of each section is a pilgrim's perspective. Whose idea was that?
That was actually,
what does that encompass?
John Hale and I talked about that because I was sharing with him because I've done so many trips with him over the years. We've become partners. And I said, well, what do you think? And he said, well, you know, he said, we've had so many people whose lives have been transformed. He says, I have a few significant ones I think might be helpful. And I said, well, if you want to go ahead and interview them, let's throw them in the book. And I think they're very, very powerful. So it was a combined effort between me and John, having knowing in the tours that we lead, and as I mentioned to you, that we had three people come back to the church on one trip. And so this has happened time and time again. And so we wanted to include that in the book because it is a transformative experience.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, how long did it actually take you to put this book together?
3 months.
3 months.
But it was, usually it takes longer to write a book, but I had accumulated much of the research already because of my work and pilgrimage and whatnot. But it was a joy, but it was also like, I didn't know where to stop. At some point you have to stop, but it was just came out of me, just poured out of me.
Who came up with the idea of the actual format that you used for
me.
This?
me and my team, Gail, and also our wonderful team at EWTN Publishing. We kind of all worked on it together, but when I told them about it being a guidebook, I said, I don't want it to be a typical guidebook, but I want people to have some structure that they can go to Italy confidently by using the book. So,
right.
Yeah.
And also the Catholic perspective behind it.
Yeah. That was a huge thing for me where there's no way it wasn't going to be a Catholic book, but I also wanted it to be attractive enough for the average person to pick it up. And I think it is. I mean, I think we don't hide the faith in there.
No, not at all.
But we also are not hitting people over the head. We're hitting them over the head with the beauty, hopefully.
Right. So, absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of hitting us over the head, is another book in the works?
I'd like to do a follow-up if EWTN Publishing would have me do a follow-up. I would like to do regional, like take one region at a time and really dive into it. Because there's so much that I couldn't include because it would have been 800 pages had I it's a whole book.
Okay.
And the other thing I was thinking about was writing a book about what it's like to live in Italy.
Oh, okay.
You know, like a casa dolce casa, home sweet home, something like that. So.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks.
Well, always
thanks
pleasure.
Thanks for doing the book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Teresa Tomeo, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, Discovering Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places and Destinations Off the Beaten Path. Proudly published, again, by EWTN Publishing, so we'd love you to purchase it through our EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTNRC.com. For all things Catholic, I'm Doug Keck. We'll catch you next time right here on Bookmark. Thanks for joining us.